Good morning. It is November 10th, 2013. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. And Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice.
Ahead on this edition of Weekend Ozarks, the effort to create Nerdies, a project designed to give young people not interested in sports a place to explore other hobbies and passions. We'll also visit a piece of land in Fayetteville that will soon be a teaching farm, letting young students get a hands-on approach to growing and eating healthy foods.
Plus, Christian Howes, one of the most critically acclaimed jazz musicians performing, talks to Robert Ginsberg about Howes' upcoming concert at Walton Arts Center and what's happening in our brain when we listen to that music we really like again and again. And again, we'll talk briefly to Lisa Margulis about her brand new book, On Repeat, How Music Plays the Mind. She's discussing the book this afternoon at Nightbird Books on Dixon Street in Fayetteville.
But before all of what's ahead, a quick look at what's behind us. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis has his usual Sunday Week in Review.
Education was a recurring topic in our daily newscast this week, namely the release of annual school achievement data by the Arkansas Department of Education. The department announced this week that 137 public schools attained achieving status by meeting annual targets and test scores. Under the Elementary and Secondary Education Act program, schools are evaluated based on individualized school-by-school-based targets, not statewide targets. Dr. Tom Kimbrell, head of the Education Department, said that the needs improvement category is the largest, with 793 schools receiving this designation.
Improvement, and most of our schools are in some level of improvement, is not always a bad thing, as we've said over and over again. Every organization that I've ever been a part of, whether we were doing really, really well, whether we were doing mediocre, or whether we were doing poorly, there was a level of expectation of improvement. And we expect our exemplary schools to continue to improve.
In Northwest Arkansas, more than 50 schools are listed in the needs improvement category, but the Department of Education also released its list of exemplary primary and secondary schools in the state, a list that included 9 schools from across Arkansas. One of the schools included in the category is in the Arkansas River Valley and is a newcomer to the exemplary schools list. Dana Higdon is the superintendent of the Mulberry Pleasant View School District. She says that school leaders are overjoyed with the news of Marvin Primary School being classified as exemplary by the state.
For me, as a leader in the district, I am so pleased that the teachers, the faculty, and the staff, and the students are being rewarded for the hard work that they have put forth for several years. You don't get a turnaround like this just immediately. This has been coming for a while for them, and they have been very diligent in their efforts for quite some time. And I am so proud for them that they have reached this exemplary status.
In its 2012 accountability report, the Department of Education classified Marvin Primary School as a needs improvement focused school, which the department defines as a school with large persistent gaps between the overall student population and specific subsets of students that aren't meeting state achievement goals. Higdon says that staff at the school made many changes to raise its accountability status with the state. For instance, teachers reassessed the instruction material in their classes to make sure it was rigorous enough to meet state Common Core standards. The school also partnered with the Hot Springs-based firm The Learning Institute, which provided quarterly assessments on the strengths and weaknesses of the school's students.
Teachers were able to look at that and say, I must have really did a good job at exposing and teaching this point to the children, and then if there was an area of weakness, the teacher could step back and say, maybe I missed the mark with that, or, you know, turn around and work with the kids a little bit more. We were able to target weaknesses in the students. We could reteach, provide interventions, and make sure that we got everything covered at the level of rigor necessary for the children to achieve well.
Higdon says that the school's after-school tutoring programs, which are free for students to use, also helped raise the school's achievement level. But aside from education, renovation was also a repeated topic of this week's daily newscasts. Renovations began this week at buildings at the Wilson Park Pool in downtown Fayetteville. Carol Jones, a city park planner, says that the renovations being done to the pool buildings is part of a larger renovation effort at the facility that was originally built in the 1930s.
Last year, we renovated the exterior. We redid the pool surface and the deck, and so this is kind of phase two of the overall renovations, and it's for the actual buildings. The pool building, the concession building, and then there's a chemical pump storage building.
The renovation will bring better Americans with Disabilities Act accessibility to the pool and to the locker room and restroom facilities. Also, the entryway to the pool will be reconfigured to allow for better flow. Jones says that the overall upgrades at the pool will bring it closer to feeling like a new facility.
The pool house and buildings were last renovated in 1983. So this is a long overdue renovation on the buildings themselves. Now, the deck and the pool surface, I don't recall when those were last renovated before they were redone last year. But we received a lot of good feedback, especially on the pool surface itself. And I think people were satisfied with the deck as well. But it was just really long overdue, and just trying to keep a facility that everybody really, really loves in the city of Fayetteville.
The nearly $404,000 project, being paid for with parkland dedication funds, is expected to be complete by the beginning of the next swimming season. And the Springdale Public Library will be closed for 4 days beginning tomorrow for renovations of its own. Marsha Ransom, the library's director, says that the closure is necessary so that roughly 160 units of metal shelving can be replaced.
It's a very large project. It holds about 60,000 items, mostly books in this case. So when that shelving arrives, the old shelving has to be torn down and removed, and the books have to be taken off the shelves before that can be done. And then once the new shelving is installed, the books have to be replaced. So when we looked at that logistically, that's 4 days' work. And as unfortunate as it is to close the library, that's about the only way it's going to get done.
She says that replacing the current hodgepodge of old and mismatched shelving that wasn't replaced in the last renovation in 1999 is part of a larger ongoing renovation effort at the library.
We've recarpeted about half the building. We've repainted throughout. Just this morning, a crew came in and replaced some of our new, more decorative type light fixtures. And also, we're adding new light fixtures to our gallery area, where we'll be installing a cafe in one side. So some of the renovations have been long coming, needed to do some of these things for a long time. When the economy was struck in 2008, was probably about the time that some of these things were needing to be done, but wasn't a good time to spend money.
While the renovation won't add extra space, Ransom says that it helps keep the library an attractive and appealing place for residents to spend their time. The overall renovation project will draw out at least through next spring. From the Harold and Blanche Kalk News Studio, I'm Timothy Dennis, and this is Weekend Ozarks at Large.
The best-selling book, The Mysterious Case of the Dog in the Nighttime, and the popular television program on NBC, Parenthood, feature characters with Asperger's, an autism spectrum disorder. Characteristics of a person with Asperger's may include severe social anxiety, as well as difficulty connecting with others. One local family with experience with Asperger's is using a crowdfunding site, Indiegogo, to help fund a training and tutoring business called Nerdies. This week, Christina found out more.
So the idea here is, particularly like, I'm thinking probably back in this corner was where we're going to have our gaming studio, which will be able to open up, or we'll be able to close it off. So during the week, you know, maybe at nights if we don't have a lot of learning classes going on.
Brad Harvey walks around a large and open vacant building on College Avenue in Fayetteville. He and his wife, Mandy, have a blended family with six children between the two of them. Every grade between second and eighth is represented, other than the fourth. The fifth grader, Isaac, was recently diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome, a condition that was found by Hans Asperger in the mid-1900s. Mandy says she didn't really think something was wrong with her son. She thought he was just Isaac being Isaac.
He's always been very hard to manage. My other two kids have, like, they've never been in trouble a day in their lives. And Isaac's always been kind of like, you know. he's not motivated by the same things that my other kids are motivated by. He almost got kicked out of kindergarten, you know, when he first started. And it's every teacher he's had has been a struggle unless they really kind of let him be himself. Because he's the, you know, epitome of a square peg in a round hole. You know, he just doesn't fit.
Thinking her son would grow out of it, they put him in baseball at the age of eight. But it turned out to be a bit of a disaster. It was dangerous for him to play. He couldn't be in the field because he wasn't paying attention, and he refused to swing the bat. She says sports are a very natural thing for your kids to be involved in. Learning teamwork, getting exercise, there are a lot of good things that come from being involved in sports. But it just wasn't working for Isaac. They did try football, with Brad coaching, thinking the motivation by his father would be helpful.
About halfway through, you know, he finally said to me one day, he said, you know, I think it may be something else other than just Isaac being Isaac. And until that moment, I hadn't really even thought that it may be another reason why he can't do cross steps, or he, you know, just is so literal, or his motor, he couldn't catch the ball. He couldn't hardly throw the ball, really. I mean, at least not well. And then we started looking into, you know, what the symptoms, what it is about him that makes him different. And I thought it was high-functioning autism.
Heightened sensitivity, Isaac hates to wear tight clothing, undeveloped motor skills, depression, one-sided conversations about a favorite subject are just a few of the symptoms of Asperger's. Dr. Marianne Scott is a neuropsychologist with the Schmieding Developmental Center in Lowell.
Children who have difficulty developing close relationships with others, who are interested in sharing information but not exchanging ideas.
After a year-long wait, Mandy and Brad got their son into the Schmieding Center. Dr. Scott was one of two doctors that helped in just one day with Isaac's diagnosis.
Well, we collect a lot of information from others that interact with the child on a daily basis, from teachers, therapists, parents. We collect a lot of developmental history, and then we interact with the child in both structured activities like intelligence testing and academic testing, and then also in contrived social situations. So currently there is a new diagnostic instrument called the Autism Diagnostic Observation Schedule that sets up several different scenarios in the evaluation room with the child where they have to exchange information, respond to imaginative play and storytelling, answer questions about feelings and relationships.
There are no determined causes for Asperger's, and Dr. Scott says there has recently been some debate as to whether or not Asperger's is different enough from autism spectrum disorders to warrant its own diagnosis.
You know, I mean, Isaac's Isaac. And he's amazing, and I wouldn't change him, but the diagnosis made me understand him in a way that I never did, and it gave me so much more patience for him and let him off the hook for just being a kid who doesn't want to be good. You know, and he has grown tremendously in this last year since the diagnosis.
Mandy says she no longer feels like a bad parent, and Isaac no longer feels like a bad kid. After receiving suggestions for therapy and tips on how to build social skills and encourage proper behavior, and with the help of a supportive and understanding teacher, Isaac went from special ed at the beginning of the fourth grade to gifted and talented by the end of the fourth grade. Isaac's goals for his fifth grade year are to make more friends by asking people more questions. The way they talk to and motivate Isaac has changed. Mandy is now understanding of what he wears, no longer forcing him to wear jeans or things with tags.
The major change that I think I've seen in him is now he knows he's a smart kid. You know, when they did all their benchmark testing and all of that, he is, I think, one of the very few in his school that tested at an advanced level or the high, top 10% in both math and reading, which is kind of unique to him. And so, you know, now that he understands more about his Asperger's, and we talked to a lot to him about other people with Asperger's, like Bill Gates, and that Einstein probably had Asperger's, and Steven Spielberg, and like, what an incredible gift you have to be able to have that kind of mind.
While taking their younger son to batting practice at a location in Springdale, Brad got to thinking, why isn't there somewhere like this for Isaac, whose interests around video gaming and building mods in Minecraft? And so the idea for Nerdies was born, a place for, as Brad says, the smart kids to go to learn and socialize. Nerdies focuses on that population of people who often just don't fit in or have activities that are geared toward them. They don't like sports, are six times more likely to play video games than to ride a bike, could care less about the social scene, paying no attention to the latest fashion trends, or care whether or not they're in the popular crowd. They are a group of smart, inquisitive people who love to learn, explore new areas, and just be themselves. Not only for Isaac, the couple's two daughters have an interest in learning programs such as Illustrator and producing music. It's a place for techies to get some training. Brad's undergraduate degree is in math, and in college, he owned his own tutoring company.
I have a little bit of background in that, and I just kind of thought, well, what a great place that we could bring everybody and give not only kids, but adults opportunities to kind of pursue the things that they love.
He also has a technical background. Couple that with trying to highlight the amazing things Isaac is interested in, and the idea for Nerdies was born.
Kids that want to be smart, and what is so interesting, I grew up when being a nerd was not cool at all. And luckily I had sports. I played sports growing up and had that, but kind of as a budding mathematician, so to speak, I didn't have that place to really dive into what I thought was cool and fun in mathematics until I got to college. You know, and I kind of joke that, you know, maybe that had a place like Nerdies before, maybe I'd have gone to MIT instead of Texas Tech University. Which is a close second, by the way.
Brad says that right now, the fundraising stage, they're learning what will need to be offered. It will be totally focused on what their nerds want. Brad mentions a robotics course, building and fighting robots. Fun, but yet they'll learn circuitry and teamwork. Nerdies has received an outpouring of support from techies and programmers that echo Brad's sentiment, that if only they'd had someplace like this to go while they were growing up. Those techies and programmers are offering to teach here. Brad says they chose to go the crowdfunding route as opposed to other means of funding, partly due to the popularity of crowdfunding in the tech community, and thought they could reach a lot of people this way. But they also wanted to see what the response to the idea would be. Their goal is $60,000, and with less than a month to go on their Indiegogo campaign, there's still a ways to go. But one look at the empty, bare-floored and bare-walled one-roomed building, and it's clear why they need the money.
So, as you can see, obviously the space isn't finished out. We're going to have to do a lot of work so we need to put in bathrooms. We need to do a lot of stuff, including heating and AC. This area right here, kind of in this far left corner, is probably our learning center. So in this area, we plan on having, like, let's say 10 Mac computers from Apple so that we have the software.
Here's Dr. Scott on Nerdies.
I think it's an excellent opportunity to create extracurricular recreational activities that might bring children together with similar interests.
Isaac and the Harvey's other children are excited for the space to open.
He's just ready to come game. He is way past excited. He said, I told him he may be on the news, and he was like, epic, I'm famous. thinks it's pretty cool right now.
No, they're extremely excited. I mean, Isaac, I'm coming home now, and he's like, I need you to come in here and look at this Xbox. Let me show you how to set up Xbox Live. And because I'm talking to him, I'm like, Isaac, I'm going to need your help to figure out how to make this gaming studio work. And so, boy, he's all over it. The other kids, of course, are like, oh, this is going to be great. Are you kidding me? We can take a class, and we can do all these fun things.
After school, on weekends, and in the summer, what kid wouldn't want to get an hour of tutoring in exchange for an hour of Xbox? The plan is to have an innovative and comfortable gaming studio. And it isn't just for kids. Brad hopes to hold corporate retreats for those companies looking to build teams in a different fashion. For more information or to make a contribution to Nerdies, search Facebook for N-E-R-D-I-E-S. This is Ozarks at Large.
This week in This American Life, our producer, Sarah Koenig, her mom has this list of 7 things you are never, ever supposed to talk about because they are so boring.
Never talk about how you slept. Nobody cares. Don't talk about your health either. Nobody cares. Your dreams.
This week, we take up the challenge. We look for non-boring stories on all 7 topics and try to prove her wrong.
Listen Sunday at 10 a.m. to KUAF Public Radio.
Come next spring, a little over 2 acres of land right in the heart of Fayetteville will be turned back into its original form, farmland. Thanks to an anonymous gift, the land now belongs to Appleseeds, an organization that inspires healthy living through garden-based education, teaching children about fruits and vegetables. They believe that healthy living begins with children. Natalie Freeman is the program coordinator with Appleseeds and is thankful to be starting an urban education farm on this prime real estate.
Yes. Okay. So it just makes me smile thinking about where we are because if you look in front of us, you see college and we're right next door to Ozark Natural Foods. So everyone who's ever been to Fayetteville knows exactly where college is. And so you're driving down the road right before you get to Ozark Natural Foods coming from the mall. You see the Appleseeds teaching farm, and it'll just be a space that's lively and full of color and full of, you know, individuals from the community harvesting and planting food and community members coming out.
The farm's position next to Ozark Natural Foods is not so random, but not for the obvious reasons. See, ONF was actually a huge part in starting Appleseeds, sending individuals into classrooms.
This has always been a dream of Appleseeds. For years and years and years, individuals have talked about we need to have a space where community members can come and grow food. And so whenever this landowner came to us and said, oh, by the way, the land is right next to Ozark Natural Foods, we were all freaking out because this is becoming full circle because Ozark Natural Foods plays a huge part in Appleseeds and you know, was essentially the one who started it. And so this is just a huge move, and it is random in a sense, but we believe that it's purposeful as well.
Building on the program started by ONF, Appleseeds has grown, like a weed, in the years since its inception in 2007. Responsible for at least 3 school gardens, with a hand in even more, the Appleseeds Urban Teaching Farm will be one central hub to make school garden training accessible to all schools in the region.
So we have a 3-part plan, timeline, for this education farm. Essentially, what we want to start out with is growing a portion of this for food and having an area with an outdoor kitchen as well as raised beds that we can grow vegetables in, and it can be an example of a school garden. And what we're doing this spring is inviting individuals, teachers, parents who are involved to come out and learn how do you start a school garden and how do you sustain a school garden.
The plan is to begin holding workshops next spring. Natalie says that they've had a lot of requests for the organization to come to schools to help with school gardens. But due to a small staff, they just haven't been able to get to all of them. This will alleviate some of that pressure by allowing the teachers to come to them. And beginning with the 2014-2015 school year, Appleseeds will host students as well. The hope is to entertain field trips here, to teach kids how to plant seeds, take care of plants, harvest the food, take it to the outdoor kitchen, and then learn how to cook, taking that knowledge home to their parents.
And then down the road, we want this to be a community space for everyone, a resource where you can learn how do you grow vertically, how do you, you know, have a garden on your patio if you live in an apartment. So ultimately, this will be a community resource, but we're doing it in 3 stages.
This land was offered to Appleseeds just this past spring, under a year ago. They have been working on a schematic plan ever since.
We worked with, the individual who offered the land for us to use, and we have been talking to community members. You know, do you want this farm to happen? And every time we talk to people, they're like, yes, 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 make this happen. And so we've been pulling in farmers, you know, to ask them, where would you plant perennials? How would you, you know, build raised beds. So we've been basically getting ideas from everyone that we can imagine, and we've been, you know, cultivating this idea, and we're finally able to say this is going to happen.
A visual layout for the farm is available at their website, appleseedsnwa.org. As of now, the land is not ready for production and no infrastructure has been installed. A long rut can be seen running north and south on the top part of the property as preparations are beginning.
Basically, what we're doing is we're just tilling in the soil. We're trying to get a hold on the Bermuda grass and also just establish some raised beds that we will start for the growing, this hopefully the spring.
Appleseeds has the land and some of the manpower, but they still need help in building the infrastructure, such as the aforementioned outdoor kitchen, which will use recycled water with a sink to wash the veggies the students harvest, teach kids how to properly slice vegetables so they can take those skills home and help their parents, in addition to many other needs.
We're also hoping to purchase some much-needed tools to be able to break this ground and build some raised beds. We're also wanting to provide a fence around this space so that it becomes a safe place for when children come to the farm. And we're also wanting to have walking paths. We need accessibility to water. All those initial infrastructure needs, we need those. And that's what we're calling on individuals to contribute even a dollar to make this happen, because every dollar means a lot to Appleseeds.
Natalie mentioned giving $1. Appleseeds has launched a Kickstarter campaign to raise the funds necessary to purchase and install the infrastructure and tools needed. There are 23 days remaining to raise their $10,000 goal. Those that give to Appleseeds campaign will receive a gift in return. Everything from a virtual high five, the opportunity to name your own plant, a magic bean with a special message, to an apple tree planted in your honor. To donate, search Kickstarter.com for Appleseeds Teaching Farm. For more information on the organization, appleseedsnwa.org. This is Ozarks at Large.
If you were almost anywhere on the planet earlier this year, you probably heard this at least once. The French pop duo Daft Punk scored a global hit with Get Lucky this spring. It rose to at least the number three spot on charts in more than 40 countries around the world. It was on the radio, it was in movie previews, commercials, in clubs. Perhaps you didn't notice it when you first heard it, but then it grew on you, and then, depending on how frequently you heard it, the romance with the song was over. That's not an unfamiliar phenomenon, and it's one of the interesting relationships between music and the brain covered in the brand new book, On Repeat: How Music Plays the Mind, by Elizabeth Margulis. Dr. Margulis is on the University of Arkansas Department of Music faculty, and she's been researching music in the brain for years. This afternoon at 3:30, she'll discuss the new book at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville. This week, she talked to me about the intense relationship a song, played on repeat, can have with a listener. It turns out our brains can have a similar response, even though the song I may want to hear again is a piece of music you may feel ambivalent about.
That's right. I mean, there's all this work from the psychoaesthetics literature in the 1970s, which in many ways looked at these problems very differently than people look at them now. But the basic idea during that time was that there's this inverted U-shaped response to repeated presentations of a stimulus, of any kind of stimulus, not just music. So what that means is that, you know, you first come across a song on the radio. It's fine. Maybe it's not really great. It's all right. And then it's, you know, you're re-exposed to it. Maybe it's, you know, playing on a speaker out when you're out in a public space or something, or maybe it's on the radio. And it's just liking it sort of creeps up on you. You don't mean to. You didn't think it was that great. But before too long, you find yourself kind of, maybe now you're seeking it out on the dial. Maybe you download it on iTunes. And then you listen to it a lot, let's say. And now what's happened is you've reached some peak place where you like it the most. And then you start to have heard it too much, right? And then it goes down, down. This is the other side of the inverted U. And you like it less and less. So this has intrigued people because it's this kind of nonlinear response to exposures, where at first it serves to increase your sense of affiliation with whatever you're listening to, and then later on it works to just push you away even stronger.
There was a song a couple of summers ago, Call Me Maybe. Mm-hmm. First time I heard that, I hated that song. and then the exact thing. You know, a couple of months later, perhaps behind the curve of most people, suddenly I find myself humming it and kind of looking forward to it. But you're right, eventually, and it seemed like it happened between the 353rd hearing and the 354th, I couldn't hear it again.
Now, that's the thing. It might have, for you, it might have been between the 340th and 350th hearing, right?
Right.
But for someone else, it really depends on how familiar you are with the style that that piece comes from. How many songs you've heard by that artist and such, and also personality factors like how novelty seeking you mm-hmm. are and how much you're interested in complex kind of things. So that curve can shift around or spread, flatten out or get narrower depending on all these other background kind of factors. But, you know, the interesting thing to me is not that there's all this variability. Of course there's variability. We're talking about this really subjective phenomena like liking music. I mean, that's such a, you know, vague concept. But the fact that you can find these reliable patterns behind all of these different kinds of experiences of music preference. I mean, to me, that's really surprising that you can find this inverted U-shaped curve at all and that it seems to be so robust across different listeners. It's quite amazing.
Lisa Margulis is the author of the brand new book, On Repeat, How Music Plays the Mind, and she's a member of the University of Arkansas Music Department faculty. She'll discuss her book this afternoon at 3:30 at Nightbird Books on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. And we'll have a longer conversation with her about the book on our Monday, November 18th edition of Ozarks at Large.
Hey, Kyle.
Yes?
Hey, Kyle.
Yes.
Hey, Kyle.
Yes, I see what you're doing. I see what you're doing. It's not just mere annoyance, ladies and gentlemen. You're talking about repetition.
I am.
Now, in the book, On Repeat, How Music Plays the Mind, mm-hmm. Lisa Margulis writes a lot about repetition, and not just hearing a similar song, but how sometimes music uses repetition in subtle or not so subtle ways, and what that does. It's a very interesting book.
Like the hook.
Exactly.
Right.
Before we called it the hook, before pop music, composers were still looking for that hook, whether they knew it or not. That thing that makes music more inviting. That had us thinking this week about repetition and how it's used in not just music, but in other forms. So this week's montage is about repetition. And I'll tell you what, putting together a montage about repetition is not quite as easy as, say, putting one together about
sunshine.
Know, exactly. But here are 10 clips that we think in some way or another represent repetition.
Did you sleep well, Mr. Connors?
Did I sleep well?
Would you like some coffee?
Yes, please. I think I'll have a double.
I hope you enjoy the festivities. There's talk of a blizzard.
Do you ever have deja vu, Mrs. Lancaster?
I don't think so, but I could check with the kitchen.
Lewis! 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 Mom! 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 Mommy! 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 Mama! Mama!
Well, let's see now. We have on our team, we have who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
That's what I want to find out, the guy's name.
And then,
That's what I want to find out, the guy's name.
I'm telling you, who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
Now, Abby, you want to be the manager of the baseball team?
Yes.
You know the guy's names?
Well, I should.
Well, now you tell me the guy's names on the baseball team.
I say, who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
You ain't saying nothing to me yet. Go ahead and tell me.
I'm telling him.
You ain't said nothing yet. Go ahead and tell me.
Who's on first, what's on second, I don't know is on third.
You know the guy's names on the baseball team?
Yes.
A horse is a horse, of course, and this one will talk.
I don't have an aunt.
Say goodnight, Dick.
Good night, Dick.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
What was that?
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
Again.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
I think she's got it.
If you'd like to see a list of the 10 clips used in this morning's montage, you can go to ozarksatlarge.com.
What drives someone to hike to the North Pole or row across the ocean alone?
I was doing something, you know. I was out there on the edge, stepping into ground where nobody had ever been before, you know, exploring.
I'm Guy Raz. On the next TED Radio Hour, we're taking you to the edge.
To the edge, that sounds tailored for me.
From NPR.
Stay tuned to KUAF for today's TED Radio Hour. It begins at noon on 91.3 FM.
In just a moment on Weekend Ozarks at Large, Robert Ginsberg talks to Christian Howes, a jazz violinist who will be at Walton Arts Center on Friday evening, and our usual Sunday morning conversation with Becca Martin Brown about what to look forward to in the coming week. Food for Fees Week is November 11th through the 17th at the Fayetteville Public Library, beginning tomorrow. Exchange canned goods and other foods for library overdue fees will help Cooperative Emergency Outreach and Feed Fayetteville. Library patrons will get $1 credit for each can or package of food donated during the drive. You can get the credit if you remember to bring your library card. If you want more information, 856-7113. And the University of Arkansas is celebrating International Education Week beginning today. It will last through a week from today. A series of internationally themed events and activities are taking place on the Fayetteville campus. It will end with the annual Taste of Africa. The week is a celebration of University of Arkansas students' engagement and knowledge of the cultures, peoples, and languages in the different countries around the world. If you'd like to know about all of the activities associated with International Education Week, you can go online to iew.uark.edu. And Friday is America Recycles Day. Devil's Den State Park will observe by conducting a drop-off recycling event. You can bring your used personal care items such as shampoo and conditioner containers, hair gels, used makeup, toothpaste, and deodorant containers, as well as number 6 plastic cups to the park in trash bags. And members of the Friends of Devil's Den will collect them between the hours of 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. at the Visitor Center. That's Friday. Items can be dropped off at the recycling containers at the Visitor Center Saturday and Sunday as well. If you'd like more information about that event, you can call 761-3325.
Friday night, Christian Howes will perform at Walton Arts Center. Howes, a jazz violinist, has been picking up quite a few accolades recently. He was nominated for the Jazz Violinist of the Year honor by the Jazz Journalists Association and was given the 2011 honor of first place for Rising Star in the 2011 Downbeat Critics Poll. This week, Robert Ginsberg, host of Shades of Jazz here on KUAF, talked to Christian Howes about his career and the quintet he was bringing to the Walton Arts Center Friday night.
You'll be performing with your quintet, Southern Exposure, and your new, relatively new CD out. I'm assuming you'll be performing a lot of that music as well.
Yeah, we are. I'm really excited to present it. It's music from the Southern Hemispheres with a lot of Latin influence, including Brazilian music, Argentinian music, Spanish music, Cuban music, even some music from the south of France. So rather than focusing on like just an all Brazilian CD or, you know, all tango CD, we kind of put a little bit of elements of each of these different cultural, musical scenarios together on one CD, and including some tunes that I wrote, just for that and in the spirit of those different traditions. And of course, what we're unifying it all with the approach of modern jazz musicians, you know, in this case, a lot of New York City modern jazz musicians really putting their spin, their interpretation of this beautiful music from these different Latin-inspired traditions.
This is an amazing band that you've put together, and a really, to me, a very compelling instrumentation, particularly for a jazz audience. You don't often hear anymore the accordion, but you're going to have Victor Prieto on accordion, and George Delancey is playing bass, Josh Nelson on piano, and Cedric Easton on drums. You'll be playing violin. So the combination of the violin and the accordion with a kind of a straight-ahead rhythm section is, for me, a very compelling arrangement.
different, right? You think of a front line in a jazz band as having a trombone, saxophone, and trumpet, and we're sort of replacing that with violin and accordion. A lot of times people think of a violin and the accordion as sort of like French salon music or sort of romantic, you know, cafe music or something like that. And there are, will be elements of that. You'll get that sort of that sort of beautiful side of it, right? The classic elegance of the accordion and the violin, but also the surprise will be how we incorporate and integrate that into a true, like, modern jazz context. So the sort of the ferocity and the, you know, the excitement. A lot of people are surprised when they hear a violin, you know, communicating or expressing in that modern jazz language or in more really diverse languages within modern jazz. And the same thing is true with the accordion. Part of the reason I'm so excited about working with Victor Prieto, I feel like he's the perfect foil for me because he is, to the accordion, sort of what I've tried to be to the violin. In other words, someone who, you know, kind of mastered the fundamentals of his instrument in the classic traditions, but then really threw himself 100% into the modern jazz realm and tried to find every way that his instrument could kind of cross over into that sphere.
And also, like you, Victor has had an eclectic background. I mean, he hasn't had a narrow vision of what type of music he can produce on his instrument.
That's right. Victor Prieto, he's featured a lot with Maria Schneider's orchestra, and he also was just a couple years ago on a Grammy-winning CD with Yo-Yo Ma.
Let's just dive in briefly, at least, into your history. You began playing at a very young age. I know that your parents enrolled you in the Suzuki program. This early education and exposure to music for you sent you on a trajectory to be a classical musician. You were classically trained. And that continued, I'm assuming, into high school?
It did. It was when I was about 16, my friends in high school, you know, started a rock band, and I wanted to go and hang out with my friends, you know, and plus all the girls seemed to be more interested in my friends that were playing Led Zeppelin than me playing Paganini. And one of the things I noticed right away was that there was a different way of approaching music in this garage band. You know, these guys were, first of all, they were writing their own songs. They were jamming along with the radio, improvising. And they all seemed to have an awareness of all the different parts. It was very different than a classical musician's approach to music. I mean, I had highly nuanced training and was a musical sensitivity in many ways as a classical violinist. But these were just different things that my friends were focused on. You know, they were creating their own music. They were improvising. And that kind of set me on a new course. Like, first of all, I wanted to be able to create my own music. I wanted to be able to write my own songs. I wanted to play other styles of music that were more relevant to my peer groups. So I sort of fractured and kept going along with the classical violinist thing. But then another part of me was, like, going down this trajectory of playing rock music and starting over with music in a way. So after doing the rock band thing, then I got into, like, blues band, and then I was playing, like, fusion, and then gospel music, and then I got into more straight-ahead jazz and eventually very modern jazz. And then along the road, picked up bluegrass, and, you know, I've just kind of became a jack-of-all-trades. But, you know, as my tastes have matured, I'm definitely, you know, a modern jazz, you know, musician. I think that the jazz is where you get that real the ability to find such a rich complexity of so many types of music that just keeps going and keeps going and keeps getting, you know, deeper and more satisfying. So, but to me, what that means as a modern jazz musician is an umbrella that can cover a total range of cultural traditions and musical styles from all over the world.
So let's talk a little bit about your quintet, Southern Exposure, who you will be performing with at the Walton Arts Center on November 15th.
It's going to be exciting. We're going to be going for it. You know, we're going to play things that are really sensitive and evocative and pretty and romantic, but we're also going to play things that are really crazy and exciting. You're going to get really propulsive, you know, beats and grooves that'll make you want to dance. You're going to feel all these Latin rhythms, really, really interesting, cool, like, sonic textures. You know, imagine, like, the accordion, the violin, just making sounds you've never heard before. You know, just musicians, you know, that I brought together that I have very special connections with that just give their all every night. It's going to be a living, breathing experience. You've got to know that when we come out to play, like, we put a lot into this, and we're there to, like, work them in to, like, to throw down, like, in a major way. So you may have to throw water on us.
And I couldn't agree with you more. The extra dimension of hearing this music live is something that's palpable. There's still an element of the live energy that you cannot be translated. And Christian, for people and music students and music lovers who want to delve in a little bit deeper to the possibilities of what you provide in terms of not only education, but your discography and so forth, how can they find out more about you?
Christian Howes, HOWES.com. Information about all my educational initiatives for musicians, teachers of music, everything. You know, we've got YouTube videos. You guys can check out Christian Howes too. But I'm very accessible, and, you know, always welcome, you know, any kind of inquiries via email or on Facebook or whatever it might be.
I want to thank you again for taking this time. Can't wait to hear you at the Walnut Center.
Likewise. Thank you so much, Robert.
Robert Ginsburg talked to Christian Howes earlier this week. The Christian Howes Quintet will perform Friday night at 7 and then again at 9 at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. You can hear Robert's program, Shades of Jazz, every Friday and Saturday night at 10 on KUAF. It is Sunday, November 10th, 2013. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And with us, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I am not going to make that terrible noise on the radio that I made in my office Wednesday.
Okay.
Did you screech?
No, I squeed.
What is the squee?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. Yes.
It was a big squee.
Because?
Because William Shatner has joined a really surprisingly long list of people I've gotten to interview.
You talked to Captain Kirk.
I did, and it was marvelous.
How is he?
He was good. He's 82 years old.
Yes, he is. Sharp as a tack, I understand.
He is sharp as a tack. He doesn't sound any different, except he's a little bit more soft-spoken than you would imagine, and he's very nice.
Well, he looks young as can be on the Priceline commercials.
Isn't it magic?
Yeah, he does Priceline.
It's magic. He doesn't look as young as he did when he was Captain Kirk, but we're not going to talk about how long ago that was.
Now, he didn't just randomly call you up to chat, did he?
No.
Because he's coming here is what I'm getting at.
I'd like to think he just ran.
I'm not saying he did not enjoy the conversation.
He is coming here January the 11th to do his show that's called Shatner's World. And the reviews I read of his one-man show are amazing. They say that he is all over the stage. He sings, he dances, he tells stories, he has videos. Pretty much anything you can think of, starting with his childhood and throughout his career. A little bit of everything. He also has a new album that he wrote the lyrics for, and somebody from Yes wrote the music.
Yes.
He is into what they call reining. Do you do horses?
No. I do not. I might look like a...
He was horrified. Yes, well, you had the boots on.
Right.
He was horrified that I didn't know what that is, but it's some kind of competition that has to do with reining horses.
Reining?
Yes.
Like R-E-I-G-H-N-I-N-G?
No, like R-E-I-N that you use the reins to do.
Yes, that's what I meant. Yes.
I don't know what it is. And We also talked about dogs and cleaning up after them.
Of course you did.
Well, I know you have dogs. Does he have dogs?
Well, yes, he has big dogs. We talked about the weather, and he said, well, does being cold have any effect on your life? And I said, well, yes, I have three little dogs that have to go out. He says, oh, I have big dogs, and they never go out when they're supposed to. So I'm a cleaner-upper. You know, I have to clean it up. Okay, then.
So Shatner is coming here.
Shatner is coming here, and you can find out more at the Walton Art Center at 443-5600.
January 11th.
January 11th. And if you're around this afternoon, you can go see Don't Dress for Dinner, which is a farce set in the 1960s in a barn converted into a country home. What's a little bit different is that this is not a British farce. This is a French farce, kind of a sequel to Boeing, Boeing, which you might remember from Theater Squared.
I do.
It's at 2 o'clock at Rogers Little Theater, and tickets are $10 to $48 with food and without. And it is the tail end of Food and Wine Weekend.
Mm-hmm.
In Eureka Springs. And there is a History of Wines in Arkansas program at 3 o'clock at 3185 East Van Buren, and that's $10.
Is there wine being served?
One would hope.
Okay.
I don't see how you could talk about it.
Just making sure.
I mean, it's the history of, so you could.
True.
I mean.
I'm going to bet. I'm going to bet you got some.
It's
wine
Eureka.
Yes.
Really?
Good point.
Okay.
So I'm going to go off and watch Star Trek reruns.
Okay.
Live long and prosper.
That was the other guy, right?
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
But Kirk doesn't have one.
Okay.
So.
All right. Thank you, Becca.
Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Finnish composer Erkki Milartin's Symphony No. 6 is high romanticism in the style of Mahler. Hi, I'm Katie Henriksen, host of the KUIF Sunday Symphony Sunday nights from 7 to 9 p.m. right here on KUIF. Join me Sunday night for Erkki Milartin's Symphony No. 6, Opus 100 from the Finnish Radio Symphony Orchestra. That's coming up 7 to 9 Sunday night right here on KUIF Public Radio.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and the Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Bentonville, Fort Smith, and Garfield.
Garfield. Just talked to someone earlier this week from Garfield.
Oh, did you?
Yep. And it will turn into a story that you're going to hear on the air in the next couple of weeks.
It's also home of the bus stop where you can get the humongous ice cream cones.
Yes, it is home to the bus stop. Let's see. Tomorrow is Veterans Day.
It is.
And on the program tomorrow, a couple of stories and interviews related to Veterans Day, including one that a gentleman you talked to late this week.
I did. Typically, when you picture a veteran, at least when I picture a veteran, I imagine somebody that was in combat. I mean, with guns and grenades and
G.I. Right.
Joe, I guess.
Right.
But Warren Blaylock, who I spoke with earlier this week, he was a combat medic. So he had syringes and bandages and stuff. And his story, he was there during D-Day.
And Battle of the Bulge,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So we'll hear his stories. He lives in Van Buren.
He does. Well, actually lives in Alma.
And we'll hear that on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large.
Yes.
Okay. And a packed week of Ozarks at Large coming up.
For sure.
Startup weekend.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to learn more about that. All sorts of things.
What's in a name? I know that I'm working on a story to learn why some smaller towns in Washington County are called what they're called.
So we're going to find out why Elkins is called Elkins?
That's what I'm going to work on.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. That's all coming up on Ozarks at Large, which you can hear every weekday, noon and 7 o'clock. I'll have the show tomorrow. You and I are back together, I think, on Thursday.
We are.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that this is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums, a production of KUIF. Thanks so much for listening.
Have a good Sunday.